We joined you back together again Monday style, brand new week, July the 13th, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I took a look at some of the crass, vile, and degenerative tones dominating our politics and debates on the show after somebody responded to me with what was basically an online threat over the previous weekend. Stonington GOP State Rep. Greg Howard, who's also an active duty police officer, talked about an op-ed he penned for the Hartford Courant. Columnist and blogger Terry Cowgill dropped by as well.
So as I am known to do, I'm poking around the inner tubes, the internet, the interwebs, whatever we call this thing over the weekend, and it's being dominated by the debate now over something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, even last week, I know, we dabbled into this, and these license plate readers, these automatic license plate readers, people are now taking to the colloquialism of calling them, you know, Flock cameras, but there are actually a lot of other companies that do this, but Flock is the what should we say, the general contractor, maybe, just the way, I guess, you say, well, I got to make a Xerox copy of this. Well, Xerox is a company. It's not the thing. Flock is a company. It's not the thing. But oftentimes the thing, you know, like Frigidaire. One of my relatives used to say, go put it in the Frigidaire. No, I'm going to put it in the refrigerator, but Frigidaire became the acronym for that. So, you know, when we talk about these license plate readers, those readers are known as, you know, Flock cameras, whatever. So I'm listening to this and watching this over the weekend, and we'll have a regular guest of ours who wrote an op-ed on this coming up a little later in the program. But, you know, I'm delving into this over the weekend. And I was participating in an online forum, not mine, trying to be as gracious as possible, saying, hey, you know, maybe we should do this, you know, before we pull all these things down. We need to have it go through the courts. Maybe this information and the way it's divvied out, including here in Connecticut, for that matter, is in fact a violation of the Fourth Amendment of unreasonable search and seizure in the Constitution. And I'm trying to be, you know, I'm not being aggressive in this conversation. I'm saying, hey, stop it here. Let's take a breath. You know, a lot of times there are good ideas that we have to tweak a little bit. You know what I mean? I mean, nothing is perfect and we have to tweak this. So I scroll down, and you know, when you're on Facebook and social media, you get little reminders of people who have reacted to what you said. And look, the vast majority, and what I was saying is online, I was kind of supporting these things, but I said, hey, they've got to be used, especially the info that you get from these license plate readers, again, these Flock cameras, if you will. It's got to be used with some discretion here, and you got to make sure that these databases are flushed every so often. If there are cops that we have seen that have abused this stuff, they have to be arrested, prosecuted, and booted off the force. So, okay, so, but I notice as the day goes on yesterday, and I really wasn't trying to be a jerk. I wasn't trying to be a jerk, but, you know, some of my responses were a little tongue-in-cheek, which I guess you can't really detect over social media. And somebody writes me back, and this is what I wanted to start with today. Because, look, you and I go round and round and round and round and round and round and round about these things all the time, and we generally have a good time. We laugh with each other. We joke. We can get the sarcasm even on the radio where it's just sound. And it's nothing like we look or nothing visual except for, you know, the video feed, which is not up and running today. I'm doing the show from home, back in the studio tomorrow. And I get a response from a guy. Now, this might have been a bot account. It may have been. But even if it was, somebody set this account up with the notion that it kicked this back to me. It kicked the following back to me. And I was saying, hey, let's wait. Let's see how this shakes out here. The Supreme Court might say these are all illegal and they'll have to come down, whatever. And somebody says to me, and I think this is the quote, I jotted it down here from memory. Swallow a 12-gauge, you bootlicker. Now, you could say, well, that was from a bot account. Well, okay, and a bot account is not a real person, place, or a thing. It, basically, when you argue with a bot account, you're arguing with a computer, okay? But having said that, I said to myself, is this where we are now? Because I was trying to respectfully, although with a little tongue-in-cheekishness, argue my point of view on this, saying, hey, let's balance this out between protections as outlined in the Constitution and, helping law enforcement here. And somebody responds to me, swallow a 12-gauge, and no, I'm sorry, deep throat a 12-gauge. Not just swallow it, deep throat it. I won't go into the allusion to the first two words, but I was told to deep throat a 12-gauge, so, you know, stick a shotgun down my throat, because I dared to say, let's wait a second here, let's tap the brakes, let's hit the brake pedal, and let's maybe debate this a little bit. And I was called a bootlicker. That's the new thing online. In case you didn't know, you know, there's a fetish for boots of leather, so you're licking somebody's boots. This a Nazi kind of reference here. And believe me, a lot of the other responses to me were almost the same. So if you think I'm kidding, go online, support the use of these plate cameras, and figure out what's the over-under on when you're going to be called a bootlicker. 5 responses, 10 responses. And normally I let this stuff roll off my back, and I pretty much did yesterday, but I sat back, and I'm looking at all these responses, trying to engage people, and maybe that's my problem. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm expecting that people can sit back and go, I never thought of it that way. And these people are so locked into their hatred of these things. I also asked a very simple question, and the responses to such are mind-boggling. So I ask this question, starting us off today on a brand new week, on a Monday, the 13th of July. In this age of caustic social media and polarized politics, it's our Facebook question of the day. Have we completely lost the ability to respectfully disagree with each other? Now, I'm hoping the answer is no, we haven't. But then again, I look at what happened to me yesterday. Nothing really happened to me because I wasn't engaging these people face to face. I was in an online discussion and saying to myself, really? Instead of saying, no, I disagree with you because I don't think you have the Constitution fully understood, I was told to deep throat a 12-gauge, you bootlicker. And it wasn't one guy. It wasn't one guy. What has happened to us? Seriously, what has happened to us? Have we completely lost the ability to respectfully disagree with each other? We'll kick it off there. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Alrighty, we're back at it here. Brand new day, sunny day. The heat's coming in, says Paul Pjorg. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Once again, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Man, oh man, between the reaction online to the death, sadly, of Lindsey Graham, I guess he had a massive aortic rupture or a heart attack or something like that. Yikes. Still passing away, what, 70 or 71? It just shows you how quick it can all end. So the caustic reactions I see to that online, and then the reaction to just some arguments I was making, albeit cautiously, about these plate reader cameras, and I was told to deep throat a 12-gauge, you bootlicker. And I just sat back and I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. I kind of chuckled and said, well, there we are. There we are. Can you imagine anything worse, or can it get worse? I don't know. You tell me, because it is horrible out there. I mean, it is just horrible. It is. And is there any going back? I mean, my God, I was streaming an old, and maybe just to cleanse my palate, I was streaming an old episode of Firing Line with William F. Buckley. I mean, can you imagine that? My God, nobody was screaming. There was a great elocution, a very erudite kind of display of ideas I was watching there. But today, I'm told to deep throat a 12-gauge, you bootlicker. All right. That'll cleanse the palate, huh? Jeff in Westport kicks us off today at 2:22. Jeff, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Paul? Happy Monday. Hey, William F. Buckley, I used to deliver UPS packages to down in Stanford, FYI.
Really?
Nice guy. Yeah. Tip for Christmas, he tipped a few hundred dollars, and great guy. Anyways, so I was in Westport driving my American military Jeep around last week, Sunday, and there were protesters on the bridge in Westport. Okay. If you know, the bridge in Westport got flags all the way down, and for the season.
Yeah.
All older women and older men, two little kids holding signs that they probably didn't know what they said. So I pulled
no
up
idea
at the
why
stoplight.
They were there. Yeah.
So I pull up at the stoplight, and the one lady's older woman's holding a sign saying, Donald Trump raped children.
Oh.
So I turned my radio and I said, excuse me. I said, excuse me, which children did he rape? Do you have any information on that? Oh, I'm sure you're a Trump supporter with all your American flags on your Jeep. She wouldn't even discuss it.
Of course not.
It became an instant argument. Yeah. And I was like, wait a second. When I was in high school, I was in debate club, and you debate things like that. You don't just start yelling at somebody nonsense about, get the hell out of here. We don't need you around here. Mm-hmm. I'm like, really? On the 4th of July weekend, they're protesting no King's Day. And I said to the other guy, who's got a king other than England?
Yeah.
Oh, you're just a smart ass. And this, I'm like, it's sad that you can't, within reason, talk to them. You know, and I wasn't being a smart ass or anything. I was like, who's the king?
Yeah.
You tell me where their king is, because if he was a king, he could do a hell of a lot worse.
You know, Jeff, thank you for the call, my friend. Appreciate it. In fact, it's funny Jeff brought that, and not funny, but it's convenient that he brought that up, because I was watching stuff again online last night before I dove in the sack there, and it had to do with some protests, and I'm sitting there, and I'm seeing all these, and again, I hate to throw this term around. But for, reasons of why we're here, I have to, certain people in government who may have been connected with Jeffrey Epstein, and the guy was a reprobate, whatever ring of whatever place in the afterlife he's at, couldn't happen to a nicer guy. But having said that, the term pedophile is now just, and the right does it too. What are we doing here? Throwing around the term pedophile and fascism, that's another thing, and fascist, pedophile, all this other, is being tossed around like it's a handful of Skittles. What in the hell are we doing here? It is mind-numbing. Everything is just to win a point. Does anybody think anymore? I'll tell you, one thing the Trump White House has done, one thing Trump 1.0 and then the middle and then 2.0 have done is to really illustrate how some people can get so blindly angry that they make no sense at all. They make zero sense at all. Throwing around. If half of you people, and I know there are some people listening out there, half of you people that throw around kings and monarchs and fascism, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Your heads are buried so far in the sand or soil or concrete, you open your eyes and you'll see China on the other side. It's on the other side of the world. But you know what? When we come back from news and traffic and weather together and all that great sort of stuff right here on WICC, I will give you an illustration as to why people don't even want to think anymore. And it wasn't, well, all right, let me take that back. Maybe I set this up as sort of a gotcha, maybe, yesterday. But I had people fall for it hook, line, and sinker because I wanted to put out a test to see if people were really serious in some of their ignorance. And sadly, I found out that they were. But you tell me. This is our Facebook question of the day, and I wanted to start off with this right here on WICC. In the age that we have now, caustic social media, polarized politics, have we completely lost the ability? And I can't believe I have to ask this. Have we completely lost the ability to respectfully disagree with one another? Traffic and weather together right here, WICC. The issue of automated license plate readers, ALPRs, all across the state, all across the country, even the world now, really catching flame over the weekend. They're being taken down, knocked down, and in certain states, I don't know whether or not that's happened here in Connecticut, but a lot of people now really drawing lines over this. Some people like myself love them. Some people say they're a blatant abuse of police power. Likely somewhere in the middle, most folks will fall. And joining us right now is one of our regular guests, Republican state legislator from Stonington, State Rep. Greg Howard, who is also a full-time active duty police officer. And Greg wrote an op-ed that was in the Hartford Courant a few days ago, an opinion piece that says license plate readers help keep Connecticut communities safe. The goal is not surveillance. The goal is public safety. Greg Howard. Greg, good afternoon, man. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. Great. How are you?
Not too bad. What made you write this? Did you want to do this yourself? Did somebody go to you? Did somebody in the General Assembly say you can put a voice to this? How'd you write this?
Yeah, well, there became a topic of conversation this past legislative session, and some of the advocates for LPRs and some of my colleagues got together and said, look, you know, you're the guy who uses these things. You know more about them than any of the rest of us do. You know, what do you think? And I said, well, you know what? I'll tell you what I think, but I think I should share it with others too. And I think that the important thing for folks to understand, Paul, first and foremost, and you know this from the times I've been on your show, I'm a constitutionalist first and foremost. I've been a law enforcement officer for 24 years, but, you know, that's only going to be for another 14 months, but I'm always going to be an American. And I think our civil liberties are of paramount concern to all of us. But I also think that, you know, the fact is that evil exists in our world, and that's why we have our law enforcement. That's why we have our criminal justice system. And as new technology comes in, whether it's these ALPRs, commonly referred to as flock cameras, or any other new technology that law enforcement, which is a branch of the government and an arm of the government, of course, utilizes, it's important to have safeguards. But what's concerning to me, Paul, is that I see people calling for an all-out ban, take them all down. I see that happening in some places, some municipalities in Connecticut even, where they've, you know, put a moratorium on the use of them. And it's important for folks to understand exactly what these are, and more importantly, Paul, what they are not. I had one legislator say to me, you know, that the flock has access to all of his information every time his plate hits it. And I said, that's just not what happens. And he says, do you know how flock cameras work? I said, yeah. Do you? I use them every single day. I know exactly what they are and what they are not. And essentially what they are is a camera on the side of the road, fixated, the ones that are owned by government at least, fixated on side of a public road, only taking pictures of vehicles that are on the public roadway, which you don't have an expectation of privacy on the outside of your car on a public road, takes a snapshot of it. And AI technology not only reads the plate, doesn't do anything with that data because it doesn't have access to the motor vehicle files to say, okay, this is registered to Greg Howard. It just takes a picture of the numbers and the letters on the license plate, and the AI technology will tell you it's a Ford F-150 black. Okay. And the way that law enforcement uses that is a couple of ways. One, if you have, say, a bank robbery in your community, armed bank robbery, and a witness says, hey, I didn't get a plate, but it was a black Ford F-150, had some bumper stickers on it, and right down the road, you know, you can say to flock, okay, in this 10-minute window, show me the black Ford F-150s that came by. Boom, you get a license plate. Boom, you got a suspect. You know, we get a dangerous felon off the street in record time. But it also works in the reverse. You can tell the Flock system, hey, we have an Amber Alert. We had a child abducted in Hartford. This is the vehicle. Put it into the system. And when one of the Flock cameras sees that car, it immediately alerts the law enforcement agency in that area. Hey, that car just passed this location. And we can get a bunch of police officers immediately to that area to locate that vehicle and save that child. So there's been success stories from California to New Jersey and everywhere in between of these Flock cameras. Now, that being said, they are very useful. It is a branch of the government that is, you know, keeping tabs, so to speak, quote unquote tabs, on vehicles, keeping documentation of every time Greg Howard drives past this location, or at least that vehicle does. And what Flock can and may do with that information is what I think is concerning to some people. So what we've done in Connecticut last year is we did what I think we need to be doing with all of this technology, is sort of threading the needle and finding a common place where, look, let's use these for the valuable resource that they are, but let's put appropriate safeguards on them so that we don't have surveillance of American citizens, and we don't have a private company like Flock taking data based on government contracts and selling that data to private companies for their own gain, you know, perhaps at the expense of the American people. So we try to thread that needle. I think we did a pretty good job. So the point of the op-ed was basically to say that and say that all out ban is not the way.
Yeah, that is us. The guest, by the way, is Greg Howard, an active duty Republican law enforcement officer and Republican legislator. Greg representing the greater Stonington area. He did put an opinion piece together that ran over the weekend. You may have seen it in the Hartford Current. The opinion, license plate readers help to keep Connecticut communities safe. Greg, thanks for the extra time. We appreciate it. Now you see people reacting to admittedly some bad behavior, Greg, from some law enforcement officers in other states who were blatantly following old girlfriends, old boyfriends, whatever.
Right.
They've been booted from the force. Some of them are facing criminal charges. Is that the kind of thing that you, as straight-ahead law enforcement officers who toe the line here, are you worried about that poisoning the well, if you will, about this technology?
No, I think that, we've had this forever, the collect system in Connecticut. You know, we've had law enforcement officers, you know, pop up here and there where they're using it to, you know, run a plate in their ex-girlfriend's driveway and see who she's dating now. But that happens. That's already illegal. Those individuals are disciplined. They're fired and they're arrested. That's been illegal. That's a misuse of a computer system. And the policy, one of the things that we came up with this legislative session is for POST, the Police Officers Standards of Training Council in Connecticut, which puts out most of the model law enforcement policies in the state, to put out a model policy that all officers will follow for that purpose, that, you know, the narrow set of circumstances where Flock can be used, what type of crimes, and anybody who steps out of that would be guilty of a crime. So those safeguards are in existence. Again, I think our police officers in Connecticut are among the best in the country as far as our professional standards and our training go. So could it happen? Yes, will it be addressed? I feel very confident. If it does pop up, it'll be addressed very quickly. And, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, right? So we legislate to the bad actors, but we have to make sure that we enable the good officers in our state to do their job and use the technology where appropriate, as appropriate, in the interest of public safety. And again, it's really threading that needle, Paul. And I think that's going to go on for years now as technology continues to be on a fast track with AI and whatnot, and just us threading the needle on the criminal justice aspect of it, of how we can use it in the best way possible.
Greg, a couple of more things here. Number one, you referred to yourself earlier on, and I know you take pride in this, as being a constitutionalist in this whole thing. What about the argument you see, I mean, all over the place, Greg, that, everybody with their Google University law degrees is saying, well, this is a blatant violation of the Fourth Amendment guarantee against unreasonable search and seizure. Is it?
No, it's not. And the reason for that is this. First of all, you have no when you talk about unreasonable search and seizure, the measure is whether or not you have an expectation of privacy. Mm-hmm. You have no expectation of privacy on the outside of your vehicle driving down a public road because you have the expectation that anybody around can see it. And that is the case. So I don't think it's an unreasonable search and seizure. If a police officer was standing there with a pad and wrote down all this information, if they could, that would be legitimate. So that the mere fact that you're using technology, the court has ruled over and over and over again, does not violate the Fourth Amendment per se. Now, I think that if you had a police officer who used the system inappropriately, and then gathered evidence, that would be fruit of the poisonous tree. That may be a Fourth Amendment violation. But the mere recording of the passing of a vehicle on a public road is not a violation of Fourth Amendment. And if it were, that would be true for speed cameras. That would be true for toll cameras. That would even be true for surveillance cameras, which we've had for years. So I reject that notion. Obviously, it has not yet been tried in court with these block cameras, but I reject it, and I don't think that when it is tried in court, that it'll be deemed a violation of the Fourth Amendment, because, again, you're on a public road.
There is constant pressure, Greg Howard, to get as many police officers, as many men and women on a municipal force or a state force, and get them out on the streets, and there are financial pressures on that, and we all want more cops, but we know what the realities are. This is what you folks refer to as a force multiplier, correct?
And that's right.
Give us a couple of instances. You may have mentioned one back at the beginning of our chat here, and I know you have in the past. Give us a couple of instances as to how this force multiplier has actually solved some crimes.
Yeah, so I mean, a great example is, a bank robbery, where instead of a police officer having to go to every business on the path away from the bank robbery and get that business owner, get the surveillance that caught the road, try to figure out what the vehicle was, what year is it, looking up a bunch of Google images. This takes hours and hours and hours. And then you have to run and say, okay, how many Ford F-150s, as an example, are registered in that area? And it takes days to do this. And now one officer, one detective, can go to that flock camera and have a license plate and be at the suspect's house before they even get home. I mean, and that's the stuff that we're talking about. And when you talk about the fact that we're down thousands of cops in the state of Connecticut, thousands, but we still have crime going on. I mean, and our crime rates are coming down. I'm very proud of the work that we've done in the last 6 years in the legislature around criminal justice. Our crime rates are coming down. But the fact of the matter is, when you are a victim of crime, when you're that bank teller that just stared down the business end of a 9mm and you're frantic and scared and you have to go home that night and you know that bad guy's already been caught and put in jail, any victim will tell you, boy, did I sleep better knowing the cops had him. So, I always reject this notion that people say, well, if it saves one life, it's worth it. That's not true. That's not always true when you talk about our freedoms, because many, 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 many lives were sacrificed for our freedoms, Paul. And we have to balance that, right? But we can balance it. So the idea that if it saves one life, we're going to sacrifice our freedoms is not the way to look at it. The way to look at it is and say, how can we balance our freedoms with our interest in public safety and our interest in criminal justice and putting bad actors in jail? And I think that's what we struck here in Connecticut. And I think calls to completely ban these things is ill-fated and not well thought out.
Op-ed in the Hartford Courant from our guest, license plate readers help to keep Connecticut communities safe. The goal is not surveillance. The goal is public safety. State Rep. Greg Howard, active duty police officer from Stonington. Greg, thanks, man. We appreciate it. Take
care. Thanks, Paul. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Greg.
Care.
Appreciate it. Yep. Here's our buddy, our pal from the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and Substack blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates, the one and only Terry Cowgill, into and through the state of Connecticut. Terry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. I'm trying to figure out how to avoid these street cameras, because I got a speeding ticket from Pennsylvania about 3 years ago when I drove down to North Carolina to visit my son at Camp Lejeune, and I was horrified to see my picture right there on that paper and my license plate, and oh, by the way, you owe us $150. So that was not pleasant.
However, have you driven that route again since then, and has this altered your behavior any?
I don't think I would go through Harrisburg, Pennsylvania again. No, I would. I think I'll go through Maryland instead.
All right. Okay. All right. You met Mr. Fazio. You said you wanted to talk about chatting with. Hey, stranger things have happened. If not this time around, maybe another time around. Ryan Fazio, what's up with that?
Yeah. So he. Ryan Fazio came to, this was last week, I believe it was on Thursday night. He came to Kent, Connecticut, and he was going to, doing a town hall. He came there as at the invitation of the Kent and Salisbury Republican town committees.
Yeah.
And originally, by the way, this is an interesting little side note, he was supposed to hold this town hall at Kent Town Hall.
Yeah.
And it had to be moved to a community center because Tom Morrison, the Salisbury Republican town committee chairman, said that the DTC, the Democratic town committee in Kent, protested against holding this event in town hall.
Uh-huh.
And said they said it was partisan activity, and that if they held the town hall there, that the Democratic town committee would organize a picket and a protest outside town hall.
Yeah.
So they moved it down to the community center, and Ryan held forth. This was a friendly audience, as you would expect,
yeah,
because it was mostly Republicans in the area. And, you know, I think he has his issues, obviously. Energy is a big one. Also, he's good at finance for obvious reasons. And, of course, education. He was an inner-city tutor. And we started talking about electricity rates.
Yeah.
And he actually quit for this, and it really broke the ice. He said that, you know, Connecticut has the fourth highest electricity rates behind Hawaii, which is detached from the mainland.
Okay.
And California, which is detached from reality.
Very
and
nice.
He got good, yeah, very good. He showed himself, and he did it flawlessly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think he's on to something with the energy thing and the public benefits charge.
Yeah.
And you know, because it's just dishonest to hide these costs in the electricity bill and then for lawmakers to get on their high horse and say, oh, our electricity rates are too high. Well, this is one of the reasons why. He talked about finance with that. He has this 2.5% property tax cap, and that went over quite well, as you can imagine. He was an inner city tutor, so he had some interesting things to say about that. If I had to say one thing that I think he really needs, I think he needs a running mate with experience in government.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got Matt Corey, who was a heck of a guy, by the way. I met him, and I think he's a good guy. Served his country admirably for 5 years in the Navy. But I think he needs somebody, you know, it's quite youthful. He's 39, but I mean, he looks more like 29, you know?
Yeah.
And I think he needs somebody with more gravitas in terms of public policy.
Interesting.
And so we'll see how that works. But he was terrific. And I was sitting there in the Kent Pizza Garden just before the event began. And Ryan came in there with his entourage, and we had a nice conversation.
Nice.
So I would say it's good. And I think he does well in these settings. So we'll have to see where it goes from here.
All right. Terry Cowgill with us from the Connecticut News Junkie and Substack blog Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, you said you wanted to add a few things regarding your thoughts on the sad passing. And he was in the middle of the Ukraine-Russia thing, trying to quell that. Lindsey Graham, what are your thoughts on the passing of Mr. Graham at 71?
Yeah, you know, he was a giant in some ways, and he was, I think part of his shtick is he was such a colorful character.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was, shall we say, malleable on certain policies.
Sure.
And he was malleable on Donald Trump because we all know the things that he had to say about Trump before, about, you know, 10, 11 years ago when he first ran. But he quickly changed his mind on that and became one of the president's closest allies. Now, what's interesting about his death is all of the conspiracy theories coming up.
Yes.
You know, I have not, but I follow a fellow named Paul Starobin, who is, he's an author. He's a fellow Wesley, and I know him from Facebook and other settings.
Okay.
But he was Moscow bureau chief for Business Week for 5 years. He spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And he says that he wants to see an autopsy. And he, you know, Paul is not a conspiracy guy at all.
Well,
but he says that. And he said, I don't know anything. He says it could be that it was just what it seems to be. But he had, Lindsay had just been over there in Kyiv and doing all of this, engaging in all of these talks about with Zelensky about governor security, and there, you know, I don't see any motive that Ukraine would have in having Lindsey Graham dead. But I do see any of the real motives on the part of the Russians. And he was saying that they do have, the Russians have assets, not only in Kyiv, they have assets here in the United States. They, you know, the equivalent of, they have KGB agents here in the United States,
of course,
most of them working out of embassies. And they have drugs that can be administered unknowingly that can cause these kinds of reactions on a delayed basis. So he says, look, I don't, I'm not saying anything happened, but I want to see an autopsy, not just some quick thing where they open up and they look at his heart and they go, okay, well, that was it. He wants to see a complete forensic pathological examination. And I agree.
Yeah, I agree, Terry. Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, the the moment I saw this, and I'm saying, well, you know, was this what was that? What was that element? They like polonium? Is that it? Didn't they kill somebody else with polonium a couple of years ago?
Alexei Navalny, I think. They can do this stuff. I mean, they have, Russians really like to poison people. That's their preferred method of murder. That's what I've seen over the years.
Clean and leaves very little tracks. All right, folks, there he is. You know him, you love him. Terry Calgill, Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and also substack.com, the blog there, of course. Red meat for mushy moderates. Hey, Terry, good to chat with you, man, and we'll chat again down the road. Thank you, sir.
All right, very good, Paul. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.